Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Coming up over the next half hour, a Vatican council teams up with a biotech company to promote awareness about cutting-edge and ethical stem cell research. And we go to Lebanon, where we hear how this Catholic aid agency is providing help in places where even the government can't reach. Seventy-four-year-old Bernie Van Zyl died but was brought back to life in a Florida hospital some years ago. He suffered from congestive heart failure, a condition for which there is no real cure. Bernie was waiting for a heart transplant when he heard about the potential of adult stem cells as treatment for heart disease. He participated in a clinical trial to repair his heart using his own adult stem cells and made a complete recovery, and has since written two books to tell people how the extraordinary therapy changed his life. College freshman Bethany Pappalardo suffered surprise attacks of multiple sclerosis that would leave her legs and even her whole body numb. After receiving an adult stem cell transplant 3 years ago, her MS attacks have stopped, and she's living and functioning normally in every way. These are the stories of just two patients to receive life-saving treatment with adult stem cells. In many cases, the cells can be harvested from a patient's own body, often from the bone marrow or blood. These miracles, says Dr. Robin Smith of the U.S. biopharmaceutical company NeoStem, come without the ethical dilemmas posed by the use of embryonic stem cells. No embryos are destroyed to collect adult stem cells, she assures those concerned about the ethical implications of the research, so no human life is destroyed in an effort to improve life for those who are struggling with debilitating diseases. I met Dr. Smith on a recent visit to the Vatican, where she came to give details about her company's new partnership with the Pontifical Council for Culture, which has made a big investment in NeoStem's research into the therapeutic potential of adult stem cells. As their first collaborative effort to raise awareness about adult stem cell research, the two will host an interdisciplinary congress in the Vatican in November. Experts in the fields of medicine, health, and ethics will focus on the theme Adult Stem Cells, Science, and the Future of Man and Culture, but in an easy-to-follow, down-to-earth way that even the layman can understand. And that's important because political and legislative leaders, those who determine health policy, will also be invited to attend. Well, I asked Dr. Smith how the partnership with the Council for Culture first came about.
We were introduced, and Father Trafney, who's very well read, was very excited about adult stem cells and our particular technologies. And we spent much time together talking about philosophies and stem cells and the promise and the science and how it impacts culture. And the collaboration went from there.
Now, one news report that I read described this new partnership as the odd couple. Were you surprised that that the Vatican would be interested in scientific research?
Well, not really. If you really go back in history, you'll see that many scientists, many people who have had been recognized as being acclaimed for their input into science have been men of faith. So if you look at Gregoire Mendel, who's considered to be the father of modern genetics, it's not new. So this was a wonderful way of putting science forward and faith and having a way to impact human suffering without doing it in a way that was ethically challenging or had any moral implications.
Mm. Now, the partnership has a validity of 5 years, as I understand it, with an option for renewal. What conditions did the Vatican lay out?
You know, it's not so much conditions. I think we both want the same things, and it's a beginning of a partnership, and there are people we'll bring into this family and this fold, and I think our breakthrough event in November will help bring people from around the globe together who are all interested in how adult stem cells can repair tissue and impact so many people's health.
What advances have been made in the area of adult stem cell research?
Mm-hmm. What people don't realize is for 30 years, we've used adult stem cells. It's called a bone marrow transplant. So we focused on this. There are over 70 diseases currently being treated with adult stem cells, such as leukemia, lymphoma, multiple myeloma, anemia. But what we're recognizing is these cells in our own body have regenerative properties. So it's not just to reconstitute a person's immune system. These cells can now be used to repair tissue. And all of the science, the many clinical trials that are going on, are looking at the type of stem cells, how they can be delivered, how these adult stem cells can impact the body to create new blood vessels, to repair tissue that gets damaged from disease. Diseases like heart attack, stroke, diabetes, eyes from macular degeneration, and that's the focus, how to use cell therapy to repair damaged tissue.
What is the success rate of, the proven success mm-hmm. rate? How many patients have you been able to see who've been treated for cardiac problems, liver, or eye problems?
There are thousands and thousands of patients that have been treated in clinical trials in the United States, and people being treated around the world. So I think the key is how to make this standard of care. And that's what all of these trials are doing, is focusing on the exact type of stem cells, how many stem cells get delivered, and how they get delivered, so that it can become standardized throughout the world.
Was it your company, NeoStem, that was that had a project with patients who had eye problems, and they had a cure rate, which seemed to me to be quite extraordinary?
We have very exciting technology. One of our technologies are called V-cells, very small embryonic-like stem cells. They have all the benefits of an embryonic stem cell without the moral and ethical issues because they come from adults. And we're looking to use these cells as how to repair vision with to create rods and cones for things like macular degeneration, glaucoma, retinal injury.
Okay. It was formerly thought that adult stem cells taken from a patient might provide the safest treatment for that very patient. But some research has proven that theory to be wrong, at least to a certain extent, mm-hmm. with patients' immune systems rejecting therapy created from their own cells. Is this a surmountable problem? And do you see the same sort of rejection issues also in embryonic stem cell mm-hmm. research?
So you are right. People were very excited a few years ago with iPS cells. It was how you could take a piece of skin and reprogram it to become a stem cell. But the problem is when you genetically alter a piece of skin to make a stem cell, you create abnormal proteins. And what we're finding is the body sees that not as normal and rejects those cells as if they were cells from another person or from an embryo. Our stem cells that we're focused on, our adult stem cells, are our own. Our body recognizes them as our own and grafts them more quickly, and you don't have the issues of rejection. So the key is to find these pluripotent stem cells that you're not inducing and making early stem cells, because those create these proteins that are not good for your body. Mm. So that is the promise. That's the exciting part, is that we have stem cells locked in our body that have the reparative mechanisms that we need to impact human disease.
And the safety concerns there in embryonic stem cell research?
Yeah, because they're not yours. And because these stem cells are so early in development, there's difficulty putting them down a lineage of what they can become without cancer formation and teratoma formation. So you could be trying to make tissue in the spinal canal in the brain. Maybe it would create some brain tissue, but you also cause tumors and teratoma formation. So there are a lot of safety issues with embryonic stem cells, as well as the more and ethical issues.
I'm not familiar with the term teratoma.
Teratoma, so it's kind of like a hairy, teethy tumor. So these cells become all lineages of cells. So you may think you're making a nervous cell, like a nerve, but you end up with a hair and teeth and all these other things from the germ layers. So that's not good for the human body. And you also can get cancer formation. So there are a lot of safety issues, and it's important to recognize that we want to repair tissue in a healthy way. We don't want to cause another problem when we treat patients.
Am I wrong? But it seems that there's less interest in pursuing adult stem cell research over embryonic stem cell research.
I don't think that's the case. I think that there's a lot more controversy with embryonic stem cells. So it seems that people are really focused on this. But every day, if you look at the medical literature, if you look at these clinical studies, people are becoming more and more excited about the potential and the advancement of adult stem cell therapy.
It seems that the possibilities of this new sort of regenerative medicine are really limitless. Where is it taking us, this sort of research?
Well, there's clearly a paradigm shift in how we treat disease. And I think the solutions to many different illnesses and diseases and tissues will be with stem cells. So I don't think it is limitless. And I think that's why the cultural impact is so important, because this will affect so many diseases, so many people worldwide. And we need to look at how this change in medicine and these advancements will affect the world globally.
The Vatican is hosting this three-day conference in
yes.
November. What is your participation in it, and can you talk a little bit more about
sure.
how NeoSTEM is involved?
Well, we're working together with the Vatican, trying to select people from around the world, the scientific experts. We don't want this to be a scientific conference. Science is part of it, but this is multidimensional. It has ethical implications. So we'll be talking about ethics, cultural implications, education. So we're going to have a very multidisciplinary approach. We'll have leaders from around the world. We'll have influential people that will together determine how, as a nation, as a world, we can move adult stem cells forward. And people can really understand that this isn't maybe 5-10 years from now. It is today. There are people who have been cured, that have been treated successfully with adult stem cells, and we need to continue this moving forward so that many people around the world can be treated with adult stem cells.
And what is the Vatican's partnership with your company? What does that mean for you?
It's very exciting. You know, so many people follow the Catholic Church, and it's important to educate. So if we could use their voice and together have people understand the benefits and what an adult stem cell is, people don't understand. You know, they don't understand what the difference is between adult stem cells, embryonic stem cells. You know, is it okay? Is it something that is sanctioned by the Catholic Church or not? So it's understanding. And I think we couldn't have a better partner in helping the world understand the importance of adult stem cells and working with us to get collaborators from around the globe to be focusing on this issue, working together so that we can have an impact on many, many people that we alone, as one small company, couldn't do on our own.
Dr. Robin Smith is the Chief Executive Officer of NeoSTEM. Well, head of science and faith at the Pontifical Council for Culture, Father Tomas Trafni, says his job is to explore the cultural impact of scientific advancement, and that's what attracted his council to NeoSTEM in the first place. The company was conducting its own research into the ethical and cultural impact of adult stem cell treatment on society. So we heard from Dr. Smith, her take on how the partnership came about. Why was the Vatican interested, and particularly your council, interested in investing in this kind of research?
Well, there are many reasons. First of all, because, as it was already mentioned, regenerative medicine and science is already providing for deep global impact. And we think that it would modify our understanding of society, and it would provoke a lot of existential, philosophical, and even theological questions that we need to think about in advance. Many people complain that usually church is speaking about some scientific research or achievements when everything is already done. What we try to do, we try to look ahead and to explore tendencies and possibilities that scientific research is providing for, and to see how they would impact globally society, you know, humanity.
Well, in fact, I was reading the Osservatore Romano, and you had a comment there where you said, scientific advances in the area of stem cell research could one day throw into question the idea of the uniqueness and integrity of the human body. in a world where we could even see immortality as a possibility, what that would indicate that the Vatican wants to get in on the ground floor, like you were just saying, of this new scientific research that could have resounding theological and ethical implications.
Yes, well, we have to realize that scientists were talking about these specific topics many years ago. In 1964, Richard Feynman gave a lecture on Galileo issue and affair. And within this lecture, he mentioned that there is nothing in the biology that indicates the necessity of death. And 50 years ago, almost 50 years ago, it was seen as, you know, a crazy statement. But today, people can see and scientists can see that cells have potentiality to reproduce themselves, and some of them are already raising a question if we will be able in the future to provide for unlimited regeneration. Of course, probably it would be not a case, but people are thinking about that. And this is interesting because it would shape human mentality and human way of thinking about ourselves, our body, our potentialities, and definition of who we are.
And, our relationship with God.
Of course.
It's not the first time that the church is putting its money where its mouth is. We saw, at least in one case, the church in Australia with Cardinal George Pell, who donated tens of thousands of dollars to research in adult stem cell research, because the Catholic Church is very concerned about using embryos, the destruction of embryos, for any kind of research.
Of course. And not only Australian Church invested in this kind of research. In 2005, South Korean Bishops' Conference made a decision to invest almost $10 million to foster adult stem cells research. And there is a significant involvement of the Church in that, because we need to show that the idea and our mission of protecting life, they are not only words, but there's a concrete action that we want to deliver to the society, and to show that there is possibility of developing highly performed research, excellent research, with good results, without any ethical, you know, problems or difficulties.
The fact that the Vatican has invested a substantial sum in this company, NeoStem, does that mean that you are in some way financially possibly going to benefit from this relationship?
No, we don't expect any financial return, as the Pontifical Council or the Holy See itself. And as a matter of fact, there's not the Holy See that invests money, but people that are close to us, our sponsors, benefactors, who share the same idea, the same values, and they want to help us to establish not only a good relationship to scientific community, but to explore possibilities of deep collaboration and promoting this kind of science that is excellent and morally acceptable.
And a warm thanks there to Father Tomas Trafny of the Pontifical Council for Culture. They reach some of Lebanon's remotest villages, tiny settlements that even the government is not able to access. Caritas Lebanon, the biggest Catholic aid and development agency in the country, has a small fleet of mobile clinics which travel up and down the country providing health care for some 600 villages per year. Caritas Lebanon President Father Simon Fadoul tells me some of the villages are so small or so remote that there are no hospitals or public health dispensaries to serve those communities. And that's why Caritas Lebanon is making such a difference.
the far out, you know, the remote villages, they have nothing. They cannot afford even go to the hospital. So what we do is the mobile clinic stops by every week or every 15 days. It depends. It has like a nurse and a doctor. We provide medicine and all, certainly.
Caritas Lebanon's mobile health units provided some 260,000 interventions in 2010 alone. And that, Father Simon says, doesn't even come close to the number of procedures and consultations carried out in Caritas's health clinics across the country.
Our stable dispensaries, medical centers, received around 290,000. Consultancies.
You know, but how do you work with the National Health Service? Or do you have nothing to do with the National Health Service?
Is there a National Health Service?
You're asking me.
The problem in Lebanon is you have, and this is the last statistics by the government, 51% of the Lebanese population has no medical coverage whatsoever.
That's more than half of Lebanon's 4 million strong population, with absolutely no source of state-funded health care or private insurance. And as the population ages, the problem is likely to get even worse.
Despite the dispensaries that are here and there, despite the work of so many NGOs and foundations and organizations who are doing this, despite what the municipalities are putting in place in that respect. And certainly the National Health Service, what we call National Health Security, covers a part of the population. And even that, yani when a person retires from his or her job, she no longer has
coverage.
So that's this coverage.
Unless
she's insured. Privately insured.
Private insurance. Mm.
So the Ministry of Health tried to take care of those who do not have any coverage. But its intervention is a very limited intervention. Hmm. And then apparently you have to know somebody and to pull some strings and to get treated. So that's why Caritas has a huge work in that respect. Hmm. And we do it. We do it.
So you have medical and nurse professionals
who
volunteer their services?
Or? We have both. Uh-huh. We have employees, mm-hmm. full-time employees, and we have volunteers. We have a medical department managed by a specialized doctor. In all our centers, we do have professional nurses or managers to take care of them. We do have doctors of all specialties. And we do have medicines. We do import medicines and to help these people. And mostly we deal with medicines made in third world countries. The same medicine, the similar.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, so we submit a generic. Mm-hmm. We submit it to laboratories and tests and whatever to make sure the ingredients are there. Just to make it affordable to the people.
In a country where Christians make up one-third of the mostly Muslim population, I can't help but wonder, do the people at Caritas Lebanon ever find it difficult to provide care and treatment to non-Christians? Of course not, is Father Simon's immediate reply.
We go by the command of our Lord Jesus Christ. Whatever you do to any of these little ones, you do it to me. You know, it's like Father Ya'ub al-Kabushi. You know, he's a saint. Anyway, he says the water fountain doesn't ask you what's your color, if you're allowed to drink or not. Right? You come and drink. I'm here for everyone. And when you work with works of love, of charity, we don't ask. We just help. Certainly, Caritas Lebanon is the organization, the social humanitarian arm of the Catholic Church in Lebanon. However, its services are rendered to all. And we do have, in Caritas Lebanon as well, we have a very strong center that takes care of migrant workers and of refugees.
When we're talking about migrant workers, you probably mean the
domestic
workers, gardeners, construction workers
mostly
who come from
domestic.
Syria and Egypt and
yeah,
so on.
Yeah.
But you have the domestic workers who come from Asia
that
and
is
Africa.
True. Yeah, you have so many from so many countries. So we take care of them as well.
Because there have been so many stories of
abuse.
Yes,
we try to uphold mm-hmm. their rights. And We have a legal defense system that the service. We do have, take care of the detention center at the general security. They have a detention center. It's Caritas who's in charge of this detention center in terms of services.
Mm-hmm.
We provide, you know, hot meals. We provide them laundry. We provide everything. We provide also psychological assistance. We provide medical assistance and legal assistance. And we do also take care of around 10,000 Iraqi refugees, about 2,000 families.
Many of them are Christian, I know.
Many of them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But you
not
have
all
a
of
fall,
them, sure.
Yeah, that's
mm-hmm.
true.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are all over Lebanon. It's not like we are centralized somewhere. We do the work all throughout the country. We do the work in prisons. We do the work with the poor. We do the work with the sick. With the vulnerable people, the elderly, the children. We have two specialized centers for children with special needs.
What sort of special needs?
When we say, for instance, autistic children, for
mm-hmm,
instance,
mm-hmm.
or mentally lightly retarded, or, you know, middle retardation.
Mm-hmm.
We do have these centers. We have one for learning difficulties. We do have a program for children. It's an after-school program. It's like academic support for underprivileged children from families of so many children who cannot who lack education, cannot follow on their kids' education, who, because of lack of space, they don't have a place to study.
Mm-hmm.
So in six areas now in Lebanon, we have this program. It's a very strong program. And last year, we had like 75% success rate. And this was actually developed to prevent any possible dropout and these children becoming, you know, street children.
Dropouts from
or,
school.
That's
mm-hmm,
true.
Mm-hmm,
or
mm-hmm.
becoming street children or, yani, they were at-risk kids, you see.
You certainly are doing a lot of projects.
That is
there.
True. Caritas Lebanon is very, let's say, it has a very multidisciplinary organization.
I know you're present also in some of the Palestinian refugee camps.
Very true. This, among
I've actually visited
refugees.
A few, and
yes.
I've met a few of your people,
mm-hmm.
especially in Dubai camp.
In Dubai, we do have a nice program.
Which
there.
Is mostly a Christian, the only practically
Christian
holy
camp, yes.
Christian Palestinian camp.
We do have program in Burj Al Barajni as well.
Mm-hmm.
We do have another program. We have program in Dahi as well. So it depends. We have Caritas employees and volunteers who are not Christian as well. Yeah, because we do the work everywhere.
Mm-hmm. But Lebanon has a very unique situation of coexistence between Muslims, Christians, and Jews. So I would imagine that you encounter less mistrust or less sometimes fear, say, from Muslims who are afraid that you might be proselytizing.
Well, that is true in that respect. But our problem, we've never had a mutual fear. Certainly, I'm talking about the moderate category. I've had so many Muslim friends. I've had so many Muslim students at the university, at the American University of Beirut, at the Lebanese University, at the Castile University. But we never had a problem. Problem arises when you have some fanatic from some coming from somewhere, fundamentalist, you know, and trying to plant their, you know, ideas that are not ours. It's not our culture. And that's why, actually, we don't have this fear. They don't have the fear of proselytism, or we don't have it. It's not. But generally speaking, no, we are very close. Myself, not as a person, now as a Caritas president also, we do have very close collaborative relationships with so many Muslim NGOs. And we do work beautifully together.
And a very warm thanks there to Father Simon Fadoul, the president of Caritas Lebanon. And I'm Tracy McClure. Laudator Jesus Christus.